Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Glenn Close, who doesn't need much of an introduction. She's won 3 Tonys for performances in The Real Thing, Death and the Maiden, and the first time around, Sunset Boulevard, and been nominated for 6 Oscars over a career that's included iconic turns in movies like Fatal Attraction and Dangerous Liaisons. She was last on Broadway in 2017 in her reprise of Norma Desmond in the Andrew Lloyd Webber musical Sunset Boulevard. And now theatergoers can see her work in closer quarters in Mother of the Maid, the new play at Off-Broadway's Public Theater. In this surprising take on the Joan of Arc tale, the central character isn't Joan. It's her mother, Isabel. Hi, Glenn. Thanks for joining me. Nice to talk to you.
Lovely to be here. Yeah.
So you stopped the show the other night, I hear.
Oh, yes.
So tell me about that. I'm always curious about...
Hey,
that's Pip. That's Glenn's dog. He's very cute. He sounds very angry, but he's not. He's just playful.
And I'm
always curious about when actors have had enough and when they decide to really break and like try and do something about whatever's going on.
Well, if it's anything really distracting...
Yeah. What was going on?
There was hammering and drilling from upstairs.
Oof. In the building.
Yeah. And it started pretty much in my first monologue. And so that little voice is saying, should we go on? Is it going to stop? No, it doesn't look like it's going to stop. Right. And then I just stopped the show and said to the audience, is this really distracting you? Because it's really distracting me.
And did they say yes,
Yes,
gosh?
they said yes.
And so are you... Do you do that kind of thing when a cell phone will go off or anything like that? Is that a thing that you've done?
Well, usually they're so good here at the Public about announcing that you turn your phones completely off.
Right.
Because even when it vibrates, it's very disruptive to your neighboring audience member.
Right.
But a lot of people forget to turn them back off after intermission.
Intermission, yep, that's true.
So, and by that time... I mean, somebody's phone went off in the scene where I'm bathing Joan and getting her ready to go to the stake.
Yeah,
so that's not a time to...
No, you don't want that.
...to stop the show.
Right,
but
right.
You know, you just wish, hope that people are know how important it is.
Yeah.
We ended up having a lot of fun when I stopped the audience the other day.
You chatted with them for a while,
Chatted with them, asked questions, asked where they were from, and...
Did you get any surprising answers?
Yeah, one person came from Tasmania.
Oh, wow. All right. And did they ask you questions?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Is there a question that you are often asked when you are, when you find yourself in the, talking to the public or something? Is there always like about a certain movie or about a certain role?
Well, a lot of times they say, what is your favorite role?
Yeah. And what do you say?
Which is a very difficult question. I really can't answer that question.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Because each of them represent very, very different kind of creative journeys for me. So, right. I mean, I could say what are my least favorite, but...
Right. Yeah. Is there a... film in particular that you remember working on with particular fondness? Or?
Oh, so many.
Yeah.
You know, from my first one, World According to Garp.
Yeah.
To my last one, which was The Wife. I mean, they all, yeah. No, by and large, I've been incredibly blessed with the people that I've worked with. I've always been very subjective about what I choose to do, which always starts with what's on the page. And then the next thing is who's going to be your collaborators.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about Mother of the Maid. It's a new play by Jane Anderson, who also wrote the film you just mentioned, The Wife. Which came first for you in terms of what you read first and talked about working on first? Was it The Wife or Mother of the Maid?
The Wife, definitely.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And then when did Mother of the Maid get to you?
Hey, Pip. Shush.
Oh, hi.
He wants to answer the question, but
I
no.
know. Yeah.
Shh, be quiet. The Mother of the Maid, I think she gave it to me probably, I mean, I think it was after we finished shooting The Wife.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, because that was pretty intense. So I think she must have sent it to me after that.
Yeah. And were you looking for a play to do? Were you?
No.
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah.
But that was, I was intrigued by it.
Yeah.
There were certain scenes in it that I thought were very powerful. So I said I'd love to do it, and then it became a question of having to postpone because of things that came up.
Right.
And then Oscar came to me and said, This is
Oscar Eustace, the artistic director of The Public.
Yep. Yes, he said, you know, we have to basically shit it off the toilet.
Right, sure, right.
Because it wasn't fair to postpone it any longer. So right. I said, they had this opening. So I said, okay, I'll do it because right. I felt like I had said I would do it.
Yeah. What did you enjoy about working with Jane and her writing with The Wife that you feel like carried over to what you did with The Maid?
Well, the thing that I really value with the two collaborations I've had with Jane is how collaborative she actually is.
Right.
You know, because there comes a point when a writer has to give up the character to the actor.
Right.
You know, it starts where the writer knows everything about the character and you don't. And then as you start to fill out the character, it's a process for the writer of letting go. And I think that's a hard thing to do.
Right.
But with Jane, she's incredibly collaborative in that way and listens. And, you know, we had certain words that we said, let's just try it. If it works, fine. If it doesn't work, we'll change it.
Right.
You know, for example, she said she had written shite instead of shit. And we said, I don't think anybody will think shite is funny.
Right.
And that actually was true.
Right. Right.
So we changed it.
Right. Yeah. In a way, it seems like the Mother of the Maid and The Wife do sort of similar things in that they take these women who are more often sort of supporting roles in stories and really makes them both protagonists and reveals how central they are to, you know, their own story and for the story of the people around them. Were you aware of that as you were sort of working on those two things?
Well, I thought it was intriguing. Well, yeah, I was. I mean, for The Wife, I'd never played a character who was as self-effacing as Joan Castleman.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting. I'm naturally a shy person rather than a extrovert, so I could relate to a lot of Joan Castleman, and so many scenes are her with her internal thoughts, and
right.
I love that kind of thing
right.
That you can do in film, and then the Mother of the Maid, I love the Middle Ages. It's my favorite period of history, next to the beginning of what led up to the First World War.
Oh.
But so you never think about Joan of Arc's family. And I was astounded when I started researching how much there is on Joan, and because of the retrial, you can read firsthand accounts
wow.
of her life.
Right.
And it's astounding.
Yeah.
And she's an astounding figure.
Yeah.
Can't really explain her.
What surprised you about this play's take on Joan and the story, and you know, because you're coming at it from an angle that, as we were discussing, you don't really expect.
Yeah. I think there's certain aspects of this play that are very personal to Jane, in that she made Joan a tomboy, where I don't know if in real life she really was.
Right.
So you have to give over to the vision of the writer. And also her mother. Well, I don't know. There's a lot of... we don't know. We know that her father died on the way home from the burning.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, and I am suspecting that her mother was there. Her mother lived until she was 80, which is astounding.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Yeah, and she did go and confront the Pope.
Right.
To speak up for her daughter, yes. Yeah,
yeah, I actually was not aware of that, and that was... I almost wish that was a whole other scene, or maybe a whole other play, right?
I know, yeah. I know. Really, it's pretty... She reminded me in the peasant version of who did I play in Lion in Winter?
Oh, was that Eleanor of Aquitaine? Yeah.
Yeah. Who also lived to be 80 years old.
Oh, really? Oh,
mm-hmm.
Wow. It's a surprisingly entertaining and funny evening at the theater for a story that we all know is not going to end well. I feel like that is a surprise and a pleasant one. One of the most striking things early on is kind of the language that's used. I feel like it's very contemporary and it's very earthy. And you're surrounded by this, you know, set and costumes that are so Middle Ages kind of period specific. Did you talk about that choice at all, or is that just how it was written?
And, oh, definitely. Yeah. It's one of the challenges of the play.
Yeah.
We kind of, in the... as we were rehearsing, came up with what we kind of American peasants speak.
Yeah.
Because we don't have in this country any dialect that denotes working class,
right,
without it being political, a political statement.
Right.
We don't have that. Like English, England, they have it in spades.
Right.
So I started lopping off the G's and, you know, not having Ghana and sort of, I mean, just so then, and then we went through the script and made it for the family, made it, consistent.
Right.
And it was really hard to get those words into my head. I have to say it was hard. My brain, my synapses took a while to
is that because,
make those new pathways.
Is that just because of the kind of juxtaposition of these words with this time period? Or was it just,
it's just the words,
sort of rhythm of that? Yeah,
it's the rhythm was hard. Right. It was hard to get the rhythm.
It does, what it does do is locate us. As you mentioned, there's no real accent that we can do, but it locates us very specifically with a certain class, with a very like clear understanding of who these people are and how they might relate to the royalty that we're going to meet later.
And it was a huge challenge to play an uneducated 15th century peasant woman because there's this wonderful book called The Waning of the Middle Ages that was kind of a classic of the time. It was written in 1924. And it starts, well, this was in 1924, saying, when we were 1,000 years younger.
Wow.
What was in our heads? You know, and I love, that's how I approach this part.
Yeah. And what's in your head 1,000 years ago?
Not as much as in it now. So when I feel my kind of losing my, the way I kind of keep focused on this character during the play is literally to have in my imagination a landscape of where she would step into every morning outside her door. And it really grounds me.
Yeah. Is there a future life for Mother of the Maid? Can the production go on to anything?
I don't know.
Could it be a film also?
I think it could be a lovely film.
Yeah.
I really do. It's incredibly rigorous.
Yeah, I bet.
So
yeah.
I would not do 8 performances again if I had to do it. It's really hard.
I mean, you're basically on stage the whole time, as I recall.
The whole time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's just a question of going out one entrance and coming in the other, right, or walking from one position on the stage to another position in the dark.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that, but it really is the whole movement, the whole forward motion, the whole, you know, there's a lot of tonal changes. There's a lot of tricky transitions, and that all is on the shoulders of whoever is playing Isabel.
Right. And for listeners who haven't seen The Wife, it's about a woman who's married to a very prominent author, and it's kind of, in one respect, it's a kind of a backstage, behind-the-scenes look at what it's like to win the Nobel Prize for Literature, which, from the early morning phone call, and then the flight to Stockholm, and then the rehearsal for the medal ceremony. So it's sort of fascinating on that level, right? And then at the same time, it's kind of this mystery and sort of a relationship drama about talent and recognition and who gets recognized for what and why. What was the thing that hooked you into the story that made you think, oh yeah, this one? Was it what you were mentioning before in terms of how sort of retiring she was? Or?
Again, yeah, it was new territory for me, that kind of character. Yes. I think it was. It was. I hadn't played a character like that before.
Right.
So that's always a challenge for me. Then we spent a whole week around the table in Glasgow. Jane and Bjorn Runge and I, the director.
Yeah, he's the director. Yeah,
working on the script.
That's unusual, isn't it, for a film?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Got to get it right.
Right, yeah. And did you film in Stockholm at all?
Filmed about 5 days in Stockholm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But it was really kind of exciting because when we were in Stockholm, we went to the Nobel, what is it called, the foundation.
Yeah.
And went to their headquarters. And they loved the script so much that they gave us, it really is almost an exact... The big dinner is exactly the way it is, and they gave us the Nobel Prize that are chocolates and everything.
I was going to ask
you. See on the table.
I just learned about those. Yeah. The sort of special food that is served, and you can apparently go all the year after the ceremony. You can go, and we who are not Nobel laureates can experience that meal for ourselves, like at a restaurant.
And the king actually gave the medals that the actor came for. It was really wonderful.
Yeah. And you were working with Jonathan Pryce.
Yes.
How is he to work with?
Oh my God, he's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't suffer fools.
Yeah.
We had a great time. I had just seen him before we went. He had just come off a tour of Merchant of Venice, and he played a Shylock I will never forget. Did you see that?
I did see that, yeah.
Wasn't he extraordinary?
Absolutely, yeah.
Extraordinary. It just turned the play on its head.
Yeah.
It was revelatory for me.
Yeah.
Incredibly moving.
Yeah.
And so he's big time.
Yeah. So you've always been a theater person, I know. You've always sort of done it throughout the years. But it seems like in the last several years or so, I feel like I've seen you on stage a little more often. Like there was A Delicate Balance on Broadway, and there was then Sunset Boulevard, both in London and here, and now there's this. Is that a conscious choice, or is that just how these things fell out?
It's basically how they fell out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. I think it's good. I don't know how much time will go away, go by until I come back, because I feel like I'm paying my theater dues right now.
Right. And what keeps bringing you back to the theater?
It's just so basic to our craft.
Yeah.
And it's creating in real time a community of people who are experiencing a story and emotions collectively, and it with the right story and the right storytellers, it can be incredibly powerful. And it's so basic to what humans have needed from the time we were in the caves.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to tell you a story, and I love that feeling. And this theater, the Ansbacher, where everyone's
an amphitheater, basically.
It's an amphitheater, and I really feel that I feel the historic resonance of the amphitheaters from the Greeks, and then, all through the centuries. And I say to myself, we're going to go out there, and we're going to just tell a story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That space does really work for that story. It does sort of suck you in a really interesting
way. And John Lee Beatty's beautiful set.
It is a really gorgeous set. Yeah. That is true.
Very elegant.
And it does a lot more stuff than you think it's going to as the night goes on. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, speaking of Sunset Boulevard, what's the story with the Sunset Boulevard movie? This is the possible adaptation of
the musical.
Really? I mean, I keep hearing updates on and off. Yeah. I did a little research before talking to you, and I feel like the last little flurry of information was, you know, about a year ago or something. But
nothing, of course, is ready to be announced.
Sure,
but I'd like, you know, it's such an amazing time for musicals on film.
Yeah.
So anybody who can be part of the group that tells this particular story, I think, is going to be incredibly exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Is the first step for you to be in the Cats movie, which is developing? Have you thought about who you would play in the Cats movie? I love that we can now talk about the Cats movie like we're all in 6 degrees of separation, which is, you know, it's a recurring topic of conversation.
The Cats movie. Do you know that I've never seen Cats?
Oh my gosh!
Don't tell Andrew.
That's actually headline news right there.
It's really bad. Right. I did see the Jesus Christ Superstar that they did for television, which I thought was incredible.
Great, right?
Yeah. I was there. We were in the room. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I was there too. It was really fun to be in that that armory there.
Yeah.
And feel it live. What role do you get recognized for most often, day to day, do you find?
I think it's between Cruella and Alex Forrest.
Okay, yeah.
Cruella is all the kids are in college now.
Sure.
And before that.
Yeah.
You know, I forget how old I am. And
Alex is the name of the character you played in Fatal Attraction, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Have you thought about how Fatal Attraction plays now in the wake of, you know, Me Too and Time's Up? How does it read now, do you feel?
I think she's considered more of a victim now, I think. I think it would be interesting to tell this exact same story from her point of view, because her story is not really told.
Oh, wow. No, that's true.
You don't know why she's so disturbed.
Yeah.
You know, what created that behavior. And I think that would be really interesting.
Have you talked to anyone about that? That would be interesting.
Yeah, I have. You know, of course, it's all embroiled in rights and whatever, somebody wanted to make a mini series or a series, and you think, okay. And
yeah. So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a way to do it that's not so, it's not quite on the nose.
Right.
You know? Yeah. It's an interesting idea.
Yeah. And you wrote the film, Albert Nobbs, which was a passion project for you.
Yes.
Is that something you want to do again? Are you interested in writing
very
more?
Much.
A film or a play or a memoir,
a film.
Or novel?
There's a film I have had in my mind for a long time.
Can you talk about it? Or,
no. Yeah. Because I think it's such a good idea. I don't want anybody to steal it.
What was it about Albert Nobbs that really got you?
That character.
Yeah.
That character that, to me, represents so much. I mean, people brought to that character whatever baggage they had. But she wasn't a lesbian. She wasn't a transsexual. She was a woman who was who found a disguise that enabled her to survive.
Right.
As a man. So I never thought of her as a man.
Right.
I always thought of her as a woman with this facade that she had.
This useful facade.
This useful facade. And she is an invisible person. Mm. And I really, you know, I think there's so many people in this world who are invisible, you know? So, and who are surviving however they can. I think survival, the urge to survive in us as humans is, it'd be fun to have a, you know, discussion about it with evolutionary anthropologists, but I think it's stronger than love. I think love has to be taught. I think survival is in our genetic system, genetic makeup.
Right.
I don't think love necessarily is.
Damages also had a good run. Would you be interested in doing TV again, or sort of ongoing TV series?
Did you enjoy that? I personally think that the best way to tell a story right now is a miniseries. I'm too old to, you know, sign myself, my life away on a series.
Ongoing, yeah.
But I certainly would do a miniseries. And I love that because the writer can say, I can tell this story the way I want in eight episodes, 10 episodes, however.
Yeah,
you know.
But yeah, they're doing some great stuff with that, like Pretty Little Liars.
Yeah, and it's like the modern-day novel, really.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's a great art form.
Yeah.
In fact, I've just, last night, Todd Kessler, who was the head writer on Damages, came to the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, what do you think?
He loved it.
Did you see any? Do you see any similarities between Isabel and Patty? Was your name in Damages, right?
No, I don't think so.
They're different women.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, yeah. Do you know what's next for you after Mother the Maid?
After Mother the Maid, I'm going to have a good rest.
Okay.
And I don't really know. I mean, we're hoping that next year, knock on wood, we'll be able to do the Sunset movie.
Great. That I assume will.
And that
film
to me would
LA.
Be worth, you know, really, yeah. I'd have to get into really good shape for that.
I was going to say, that's its own heavy lift.
Yeah.
I remember that we talked around the time of Sunset Boulevard and we were backstage and you showed me some of the costumes you were wearing and they were literally heavy lifts. They were so heavy. It was like beaded and covered and like, I remember 20 some pounds or something.
Yeah.
A lot.
Well, you should have used our Pippi backstage.
I did. That's true. It's true. That's actually true.
The famous theater dog.
Yep, yep. would you want to do another musical on stage, do you think?
At this point, I've always, you know, you have to be fair to your investors, right? So you have to be in a play long enough for them to have a possibility of making some money back.
Right.
And for me, at this age, you know, 14 weeks... There's, to me, it has to be a really, really good reason to come back.
Right. Yeah. Is that true of plays as well, or are they a different
theater period?
Yeah. Theater period. Yeah.
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 It's so much harder than movies.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's interesting.
Are you kidding me?
Because I feel like there are days. There can be really long days on film set or TV, particularly TV sets. I guess.
Yeah.
But it's
TV
not,
sets. It can be brutal.
Yeah.
But you don't do it for a number of, you know, months.
Yeah, true.
You know.
Yeah.
And if you have a very demanding part, it's kind of fascinating that, well, not so much this part, because it's evident how emotionally rigorous and it is, that you spend, on stage 2 hours and 15 minutes, 2 hours and whatever. And it basically rules your life.
Yeah, because you sort of have to orient your day to it,
You have to make sure your voice is all right. You can hear mine's a little scratchy this week.
Yeah. Happens. Right.
It's rigorous, but it's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, we look
forward. I'm very lucky to be here. I love being at the Public. This is the first time I've been at the Public.
Oh, yeah? And what do you love about it?
I love the culture. I think Oscar is a genius. I think, you know, it's still what Joe Papp envisioned. I think this is as close to a national theater as we'll ever get.
Yeah.
I think what impresses me is the new talent that's nurtured here. The degree of talent is mind-boggling. And the diversity.
Yeah.
It's very, very exciting. And you know, I share a dressing room with my fellow actresses in the play, and I love that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There are no, you know, ego assholes around.
Well, we look forward to seeing whatever it is that gets you on stage next.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. Great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
That was Glenn Close, now starring in the title role in Mother of the Maid at Off-Broadway's Public Theater. If you like what you've heard on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe wherever finer podcasts are dispensed. On the next episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Michael C. Hall, the Dexter star who's back on stage in the Signature Theater's Off-Broadway revival of Will Eno's comic monologue, Tom Paine, based on nothing. Until then, thanks for listening, and see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suf's celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suf's has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.